Hey all, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I talked to the great Martin Rickman from Uproxx's Dime Magazine. You may have seen a week or two ago, time isn't really anymore, so I don't remember exactly when it was, but he wrote a great Colin Sexton story, and he's also a Cleveland native, so it was an excuse for us to get him on, and we did a two-part episode with him, so today is part one. We were only going to do one episode with Martin, but he was so great and so gracious with his time because Martin is the best that we got two episodes out of him. So you're going to hear part one today. This is basically exclusively, as the title of the podcast suggests, a Colin Sexton focused podcast. Part two will be out on Monday. In that one, we talk about the roster, the draft, JB Bickerstaff, a whole bunch of other Cavsy things with Martin. But part one here is really all about the one and only Colin Sexton and the great story Martin wrote for Dime. So please take a listen. Hope you guys enjoy. Martin, again, is an absolutely fantastic guest. So if you like this and you're listening for the first time, come back Monday for more of Martin Rickman. Also want to let you know that today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Joined now by a proud son of Cleveland, a Midwest respecter, Martin Rickman. Martin, what's up, buddy?
Midwest respecter. I'm going to get that tattooed on my back where LeBron has his tattoo. I think that's a really good thing to do. So thank you.
We're not on a video on Zoom, but I actually have it tattooed under my eyes and across my knuckles because I'm just extremely hard.
How would you get that all over your eye? That's a lot of letters. Are you removing the this is a remove the vowel situation?
I got the V Midwest. It's just like, you know, just trying to be edgy. I'll be edgy.
MGK would respect that, probably.
Do you know how many nerves and everything are in your face and how incredibly painful
I'm sure
would
it would be terrible, and I do not have the – I would not make it through. I'd be like, sir, we got half the M, and I'd be like, I got to go, man. Like, I don't even know what this is, but I got to go.
It's just like a bad, like, that's graph. No. It just goes up and a little bit down.
Yeah, it's like a fake teardrop that, that a lot of people get. But if you don't know who Martin is, he runs the show over at Dime – at Uproxx. He wrote and we're talking to him because not only is he awesome and smart and he's been in the show before, but he wrote a really great Colin Sexton profile. So we're gonna do some Colin Sexton respecting on this podcast. Martin, I want to start in this profile that the lead anecdote about the garage and his kind of that kind of being instilled in him and kind of presented to him at a really young age. I didn't know that. Number one, which makes it great. But number two, I was like, oh, this extremely to me checks out. When I think about how Colin Sexton would end up being wired the way he is, that was a very unsurprising thing that it was just like that was just presented to him in a bunch of different ways. And just kind of that the basketball stuff was just sort of like always kind of there for him in a really direct way, considering like what he is now and how he what his hobbies are now, which is basically play basketball, watch tape and play more basketball.
Yeah, it was interesting for me because that was always the hypothesis for Colin Sexton. Like, I think like you guys, and I think like most Cleveland fans and anyone who follows the NBA, there's this lack of understanding about who Colin Sexton the person is. And that was something I really wanted to get to the bottom of, even if, you know, circled in my notes, it just says like Colin equals basketball, because you know that that's what his life is. But you know, there's someone beyond that, even if that is your life. Like, if ball is life, what does that mean? Where did it come from? How did you get that way? And what are the anecdotes that kind of support that? And he offhand in our first interview mentioned, you know, this was just where I practiced was the garage. And I was like, what do you mean the garage? No one practices in their garage. And he explained, well, there was this winter where we had it behind the house and the hoop, it was too cold and we were wearing jackets and we were inside and we couldn't play outside. And my mom got sick of my brother and I beating each other up and just yelling and arguing, which is, you know, what brothers do. And so she just said, you know what, we're taking this hoop and we're bringing it in the garage. Cause they had, I guess, like 15 foot ceilings or at least high enough so you could shoot in there, which is kind of crazy. I mean, I haven't seen pictures and I, you know, maybe that was something I should have tried to get at some point is what this setup looked like, but it was so clear to me when it was explained that I didn't necessarily need it. And then I kind of just latched onto that. So in talking to his brother, his sister, his dad, anyone that I could, you know, talk to about this, I just wanted to complete this picture of what this was like and how it really shaped not just Colin, but basically the whole family's interpretation of what basketball is and what it means to that family. And I mean, we all know, you know, when your parents coach you, but they're also coaching other people, what that dynamic means. And I, you know, don't think about it probably as much as I should in relation to them coaching other individuals and you being the younger son. And then that younger son becoming the person who has all the potential, has the gifts, and then ends up being, you know, superstar caliber. And I think all of that all just tied in, you know, something his sister told me that had stuck with me was she said, you know, we didn't celebrate birthday parties the way that other people do. We didn't go to the bowling alley or go to movie theaters or go to Chuck E. Cheese. Like our birthdays happened, but one of us had a game. You know, so we were in a gym playing and, you know, at some point you have a cake or you have pizza party or whatever, but you know, your birthday is on a Saturday and you just so happen to have the doubleheader that day, or you've got a travel camp that you had to go to. And that's just what life was. And so their moments happened in the gym. They happened in car rides home. They happened around the dinner table where I'm sure they were talking about basketball, even if life and homework and the movie Rush Hour came up, like, This is who they were. And so when you see Colin as intense as he is, that makes more sense, especially when you learn that he was that way as like a baby. He was making the mean mug. He was being the young bull. He was stubborn as you can see him. And then you say, okay, well, I mean, this isn't an act with Colin. This is just, he's been this way since he was a little kid. If he loses at Uno, he's this way. If he doesn't get what he wants, if he loses, you know, if he doesn't get to watch the movie he wanted to watch when he's 3 years old, he's going to make that face. He's going to clench his fists and he's going to mean mug. And so you see that evolution and you say, okay, well, what adult Colin Sexton inhabits. And I still say adult with like a smile on my face because as Jason Tatum has been 19 for 5 years. I feel like I've been saying that like Colin Sexton is as young as he is. He's still 21 years old. Like he's moving into new apartments. He's doing all the things that, when you get out of school, you do, except that he's entering year three of having to take the mantle up of being the successor to LeBron James in a team that's rebuilding and has had like 19 coaches in the last 5 years. Like it's just incredible what he's had to do, but the context is always the thing that matters to me when trying to frame this. And what was so exciting was he had kept so much of that close to the vest early on, even in college, even when he got there. Little pieces along the way that were revealed, but for him, basketball was the mission. And, you know, his big thing is move with a purpose. And that purpose was get established, prove everyone around him wrong, so to speak, you know, and continue the chip on your shoulder mentality that he's always had. But he can talk about everything else once he gets a little bit set up. But I think there's this little part of him that says like, you know, I am a person too. I think he sees the same thing we all are seeing in the NBA, which is personalities matter. And it's a little bit of a safer time to reveal pieces of you due to a lot of the work that Kevin and some of those other guys have done in promoting mental health and promoting, you know, the idea that these guys aren't flat one-dimensional basketball cards, basically. They're people first. And you can showcase some of those things and some of the trials, tribulations, the heartaches, all the things that you had as a kid, even if like you're not so far removed from it that it's still a little bit embarrassing for you. Yeah, I mean, all of us still don't like hearing jokes about what we did when we were kids, but it makes us who we are. And I think embracing that, and I think this time right now and COVID is a big part of that. Like those moments do matter. And he had so much extra time with his family that he trusts them that they can be a part of this world, even if they are joking about, you know, him being obsessed with his closet being clean and not letting his brother borrow his Jordans. Like, I just think all of those things all add up to what we saw, and which is what the lead of the piece was, that, you know, you drag a basketball hoop from your backyard into your garage, and that's your origin story. And I think every NBA player has one. It's just a matter of whether or not they're revealing the true reason, or the one that really was impactful, or even if they haven't recognized it, they haven't reflected on it, or they can't identify it. But those moments exist. I mean, even for all of us to shape who we are as people. And, you know, I think all of us look back on certain moments, even if they're kind of buried in a fog of hangovers and travel and, you know, jet lag and anything else that we've had going on. Every once in a while, you wake up in the middle of the night and something pops in your head, or you're on a train and you think of something. And those are the moments that I think really stick out. And I feel like for NBA players, they're more reflective than they've ever been. And I think the bubble, I think the quarantine and all the time away from the game had a lot to do with that. And I think even the younger players are connected to that right now.
You mentioned that he's entering year three and, you know, being the successor to LeBron James, who is, we all know he is the foundation of the Cavaliers. Like, did you talk about that all with Colin? Like, not even that, but he took Kyrie Irving's old number, and Kyrie's arguably the best point guard in franchise history as well. Like, does Colin feel any pressure in that situation, or is he just kind of thrive in this moment and, you know, just use it as added motivation to just improve upon himself as a player?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the latter for him. I'm sure there is this understanding that he has an obligation, or at least he feels a sense of obligation, to take the team to the playoffs and to, you know, continue to establish, you know, the reputation of what the team was based around Kyrie and based around LeBron. But I don't think that's one of those things that he, you know, puts on his wall. I think the biggest thing for him is he just wants to be in the playoffs. That's something that comes up over and over again when you talk to people close to Colin, is he so badly wanted the opportunity that even the Suns had to have those games where people are watching him and watching the team and seeing what, you know, they're capable of as a collective group, but they're not quite there yet. You know, it's just, it's hard because this is where that constant push and pull of like player fit versus team fit comes in. And there's no doubt in my mind that if Colin was on Oklahoma City, it's not like he wouldn't be thriving there. And then he's not the one who gets to showcase his talents down there. I mean, if he's in Orlando doing this, or he's, you know, in Phoenix doing this, but it's gotta be so hard and heartbreaking for those guys like Colin and the players down in Atlanta and some of those other guys, you know, just didn't get the chance to play. I mean, the Delete Eight nickname was just so fitting because it felt like almost the snap from the Marvel universe where those teams just didn't exist for 6 months. It's just absolutely insane because
it's brutal.
It's and you guys know, I mean, you guys have to podcast about this. I talk to Brad Rowland about this all the time. It's like, how do you fill a podcast when literally nothing's happening? And I was like, Brad, just start watching the OC again. Come on, and talk about the OC. Like,
if my DMs with Brad about deleting team coverage ever get leaked, like it's just like a tire fire of being like, yeah, dude, I don't know. Like we've talked about like. Yeah. It's like I've talked about John Collins for like 5 hours already. Like, I think I've said enough about John Collins this last season or whatever.
Yeah, but
like,
go Deeks.
There's a limit. Yeah, right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about more Colin Sexton with Martin Rickman.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business that has been in the online auto parts space for 20 years. They have just about everything you need, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. I know Evan, our co-host here, once bought a replacement part for his air conditioner in his car and saved himself a ton of money. At Rock Auto, you get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up twice as much for all the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. And again, be sure to write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you.
All right, we're back. Martin Rickman from Up Rocks is with us talking about Colin Sexton. Martin, I want to ask you a question because it's about a certain Colin Sexton thing, because it was the first time that I had heard about him, and I don't know if this was the first time you had heard about him or made aware of him, but it's the time where he played 3-on-5 against Minnesota, and when he was with Alabama. For people that don't know, like, basically Colin Sexton was on this Alabama team. They get into the entire bench gets ejected. They have another player injured, and then they have someone fall out. So they're down 10 with 10 minutes to go. He has to play 3-on-5. He ends up scoring. He ends up being the guy that really pushes them, getting the lead down to 3 points. He misses a shot with like around 118 to go, according to the ESPN story I pulled this from. But scored 40 points in this game. Colin Sexton, or Rick Pitino says Colin Sexton can be a single team by himself. Later on, and he says he's just that good. Obviously, that's absurd. That whole experience, we're playing really good until it got wacky. And Dwayne Wade, who obviously has a connection to Colin via agency and things, RT's a clip of him and is praising him. This, to me, just, like, stuck out in terms of just, like, what I would come to understand Colin as in the NBA. Like, this attitude just seems like a very fitting thing for Colin. And it's cliche, and I think people that are pro Colin Sexton will maybe can go overboard on this sometimes because it's just kind of a natural part of his DNA as a player. But for him to do that, and for that to be like, oh, the way he kind of entered himself, at least in my case, into my brain, and I think probably a lot of people's, that's just like very fitting to me, is that this guy ends up scoring 40 and almost brings his team back playing 3-on-5. And he wasn't really fazed by that. And there's something just kind of really, to me, fitting about that being a Colin Sexton moment.
Yeah, it's funny though, because there's two sides to even that. And the second side of it is he feels this sense of need to kind of put the team on his back at all times. And I think as we've watched Colin in the NBA, there's been these moments where the Cavs are down like 8 in the third quarter, and you see him like decide almost internally, all right, now I need to do this. But that's not how it works in the NBA, because every player is a guy who could probably put 40 up when it's 3-on-5, or at least of the 450, 300 of those guys could do it. And so that's been a constant push and pull and a battle for him, is trusting those around him and trusting his coaches. And, you know, it's you want the guy who has the dog in him, who says like, screw it all, like, I will do this. But you also can't do it in the NBA on a regular basis. You need teammates around you to help pull you up and do it with you. And on a bad basketball team or rebuilding basketball team, so to speak, you've got to work within the flow of the offense, take it possession by possession, and you can't erase a deficit like that the way you could in college. And so I think what makes him such a fierce competitor, and what makes him somebody who I do have a lot of faith and belief in that he's going to have an extremely long NBA career and be very successful, is also the thing that has caused so much frustration among advanced analytics guys, among Cavs fans in general, is, you know, why is he so stubborn that he's putting his head down and trying to drive through 4 people? Well, it's because that's what he did, you know, as a kid, playing against his brother who's older than him, playing against other guys who are older and bigger than him, and, you know, being on these teams where he had to prove himself. He felt like he needed to be the guy. He felt like he needed to, whether it was, you know, because he wanted his dad's approval, if that's part of it, which we all do, you know, it's not something we got into, and it's not something I feel like there was a battle between the two of them, because there isn't. The two of them get along very, very well, and they helped each other along the way so much. I mean, his dad would, if there was too much pressure on Colin or if they wanted a true evaluation, they would change Colin's hair or they would swap numbers with another camper so that they would get a true evaluation at these camps. And so it wasn't just, oh, like anyone's expectations of what Colin is, they'll just write it down on a piece of paper at these things. Like, no, they wanted the you know, unblemished truth so that they could get better. But I think it's just, you want approval from those around you. You want people to believe in you. And when you are a younger, he's younger of two kids above him, you know, his sister's older, his brother's older, and you're fighting for attention, even in your own household. That never really goes away. And I think the Alabama thing is such a great microcosm, that game especially. I mean, did you guys watch that live? Because that was like still one of the most insane things I've ever seen live on a basketball game. Absurd. It doesn't feel real.
No, it doesn't.
And so you have a situation where that put him on the map, probably for draft people, I think, more than anyone else. I mean, anyone who followed college basketball kind of already knew. I mean, he was doing this in like eighth grade, that he would try to put the team on his back during like an eighth grade championship game. And that game exists on YouTube and you can watch it. And he's still doing the same stuff. I mean, he's like in his stance and acting like Colin Sexton, except just like a baby version of him, which is kind of amazing. And I just think the switch needs to flip, and he is aware of this. And that's the thing I think the Cavs fans need to understand the most coming out of this piece, is not so much any of the cool anecdotes or anything else. Like, I think all of those things are really great for people to understand, but Cavs fans already were paying attention to Colin, so they didn't need another reason to root for him. What they needed was a reason to like trust him. And I see the arguments that you guys have to interact with all the time, even though I'm not as invested in them as I used to be when I wrote for, you know, the Cleveland SB Nation site, or when I was, you know, helping Conrad with Fear the Sword or anything else that I was doing way back in, you know, when I was had my desk job and I was doing that because I didn't want to do real work. But I see those arguments, and I just think people need to understand that this kid wants to win so badly. It's hard for people like that to deal with losing. And so that relationship with Kevin, again, is so valuable to him. The relationship with guys like Dwayne Wade and CP3, who he's friends with, like they've helped mentor and bring him up. And Chris, of anyone, understands what it's like to come close and to want things so badly and to not get them. But he runs the risk all the time of turning his teammates off and of coming off, you know, almost like an asshole. And we hear that about Chris Paul all the time, but it's not because like Chris is a bad dude. It's because sometimes you just like can't articulate the frustration that you have around wanting to change the situation that you're in, but also knowing that no matter what you do, you can't change it. But that doesn't stop you from like rolling the boulder up the hill. Like the and this is like a LeBron thing too. Like for LeBron's first time in Cleveland, there was just no amount of anything LeBron could have done to win a title. It just wasn't going to happen. Like we talk about roster construction, we talk about coaching, talk about Mike Brown's lack of an offense, whatever it is you want to do, like high profile free agency guys not working out, dude not playing up to their level. But for whatever reason, the teams that he had were the teams that he had. And those teams weren't capable of winning a title, no matter how Herculean the effort LeBron put forth were. And I'm not comparing Colin to LeBron. I'm from a basketball standpoint, it's a mindset thing. And I think that's where Colin has to do some sort of conservation of energy, work on figuring out the best way to get through an 82 game season rather than trying to make every game acting like you're playing 3-on-5. And he did, he revealed some really interesting stuff to me about, you know, talking to Kevin about kind of those sorts of things. You know, what do you do when you're on a losing streak? What do you do when you're on a back-to-back? What do you do when you're playing a long road trip? And you have to draw some sort of inspiration, but also confidence from, okay, well, we won one game out of seven, but how do we get enough out of that one to keep us going so that we're not 1-7 in the next eight, you know, that we go 4-4 in the next eight games. And then that's what turns your team from like an 18 win team into a 31 win team. And there's a huge difference in mindset between those two seasons, both from a fan perspective, but also from a front office perspective and what the team is operating under. And I think every sense that you get is that heading into year three, that's the focal point for him. And from an individual standpoint, it's improving, you know, making sure he's making the right passes, seeing things earlier than they already are so that you don't make the pass a split second too late. And that's something Larry Nance and I had talked about back in December, is working on the angles and making sure that the young guards understand that that guys are going to be where you think they're going to be. You don't have to wait for them like you used to in college or in high school. We've run the place. These guys know where they're supposed to be. And then also just like making the right decisions. And a lot of those right decisions are trusting the teammates around you, trusting the talent around you. And I think you started to see there before the season got shut down that JB was really operating with the best players on the floor, knowing who those guys were, and then utilizing those. And I think putting Colin on the floor with the guys who he can trust as well, and him being able to trust his coaching staff and having the same coach from one off season into another off season, which he hasn't had since high school, is going to be really beneficial for him. And that's where you'll start to see him tap into those little moments, like almost a Mario mushroom version of the 3-on-5 Alabama versus Minnesota game, but him not trying to play that way the whole time. And so you can unlock 40-point efforts. You can unlock a 10-0 run, but it's not to the detriment of the overall game performance. And, if that team improves to a level where, I'm not saying they're going to be the 8th seed this year, and maybe Colin isn't most improved, but maybe if he gets a few votes, the team has a winning streak of some sort or turns it around in the second half of the season. You know, all you look for is growth. And then in year four, you hope that they are in the playoffs, because if you have all these high draft picks and you're not there yet, then it means the rebuild didn't work. But this is the year where you hope that things turn around. And I think KPJ is a big part of that. I think getting Dylan in there is going to be a really big part of that. Growth from Garland is going to be important. The increased passing ability and 3-point percentage from Larry, whatever they get out of their bigs, whatever they get out of, the draft pick, whether that is a trade or they select someone they really believe in and can probably operate, both on the perimeter, but also defensively. And then, what Kevin provides is still, kind of just a bonus at this point. But I think this is a year where you're really going to start to see what Colin Sexton is made of. And I think that all of those individual stories that have led up to this moment allow him to become that and to feel comfortable in that.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Built Bar, and the new Built Bar is even deliciouser. There are 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new flavors, including cookies and cream, cherry barcia, and carrot cake. And some of the 12 original flavors that I'm sure you already love include banana bread, orange, coconut, and peanut butter brownie. These protein bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious guy. They help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, great for a keto diet. And if you want to look at the profiles of these, take cookies and cream, for example, 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 grams of net carbs. That's one of the ones that I have always stocked up in my cupboard. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off your first order at BuiltBar.com. They also have a great strawberry flavor right now while supplies last. So again, promo code LOCKED, 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Today's podcast is also brought to you by OhioVersusEveryone.com. This is a new website that just launched August 1st, and it's called OhioVersusEveryone.com. The site covers all Ohio sports and pop culture. They have in-depth, interesting articles about the Cavs, the Browns, the Indians, the Reds, the Bengals, the Buckeyes, and more. Right now on the site, they have a really good breakdown of LaMelo Ball, a potential, although not likely, Cavs draft prospect. And also Tom Valentine wrote about the Browns having a head coach they can finally believe in one Kevin Stefanski. It's all your favorite teams, all in one site. And because they cover all the teams, they only bring you the best, most interesting topics. Check them out. Again, it's OhioVersusEveryone.com. That's OhioVersusEveryone.com.
I guess just a quick follow-up, because you mentioned it really well. Like, fans who watch this kind of get this weird preconceived notion about Colin, and it all kind of started last year when I think it was Vardon with The Athletic dropped that bombshell or said, like, a lot of Colin's teammates said he doesn't know how to play and all these. It was raking Colin across the coals. And then this season we notice, like, every now and then Kevin Love just has outbursts, and there's a moment where he seems frustrated with Colin and people zero in on thinking that Kevin genuinely hates Colin. And based on my interactions with Kevin, it seems further from the truth, but I feel like you know just as well as maybe I do or as Chris does, like, maybe you can help put this narrative to rest that, like, Kevin Love genuinely likes playing with Colin Sexton. He just wants him to succeed and be his best. And that's,
yeah, I think it took time. I think, and I don't know how much of this is on Kevin. I think some of this is an organizational failure, frankly. But the beginning of that tenure was not good. And I think Colin's also just a little different in the sense that, like,
he seems like a shy kid who's trying to feel you out first.
He's shy, and, like, his hobbies are basketball. And that has been the case. Everyone I've ever asked about this, they're just like, that's just his work ethic is basketball. He loves basketball. And it takes, I think, time for guys to kind of bond with him. Like, he's not, like, I think he's just turned 21, he's only 21, but he's not, like, gonna be a wine guy. He's not a big movie guy. Like, the first time I interviewed Colin Sexton, I was like, you know, like, what do you do to kill time? And he's like, I don't know, I watch tape and do stuff. I'm like, oh, have you seen any movies lately? Like, and he's like, the only one I've watched is The Equalizer. And he's like, he had, like, nothing to really say about it. He's just like, his whole vibe is just doing stuff.
Well, Larry Nance, like, joked with us too, like, he's like, well, Colin's probably suffering right now during this whole pandemic because he can't play basketball right now, like, in a gym or
anything.
Yeah,
so he started pushing sleds of weight up a hill in Atlanta. And then, the guy is actually literally different.
And then Dylan Windler tells me, he's just like, yeah, no, I think Colin, I don't think he has any hobbies. I just think he goes home and sits on his couch until his alarm goes off telling him he can practice again. Like, I know his teammates dog him on it and, like, joke about it, but I don't know. Martin, I feel like you know is just as well as we do. Like, Kevin and his teammates, like, love Colin. Like, they wanted him to succeed, and I think the organization as well sees him as, like, the culture setter going forward, like, to build this culture that they've been trying to achieve for so many years now, right?
Yeah, so this is multifaceted, I think, and this is why it's so interesting going back to looking at, you know, sourced material and kind of that piece specifically with Joe. It was funny because there was a, you know, I'm sure you guys did the same thing. You have group texts and you try to, like, predict who said what quote. And that's where you start to kind of, and I don't have the right answers because I don't know. Only Joe and the people who talk to Joe do know. But I just don't think that there's a coincidence that the team started playing better, Colin started playing better, and you didn't hear those reports anymore after Jordan Clarkson was gone. I mean, a lot of it had to do with Jordan has a way that he plays.
Yeah.
And it's very freewheeling and it's very confident. And there's not a lot of, like, external pressure from Jordan on how he plays the game. If he makes a mistake, he's not hard on himself. He just moves right on. Colin's kind of not that way. If he makes a mistake, he, like, gets angry because he wants to have done it the right thing. And sometimes that leads to another mistake, which is what happens with young guys. And sometimes it leads to him, like, fueling himself and doing amazing things. But, you know, it was interesting. There was a lot of oil and water in that locker room last year. And it started the year prior. When you go from a championship team that's used to having the gravity of, like, the biggest sun in the history of suns, like, and everyone rotates around it because you're in that guy's orbit. And so the people who know how to play their role are totally comfortable just rotating and just spinning around in that orbit. And then guys who can't just, like, bounce right out and they go into wherever they head. And, like, LeBron has this way of, you know, pretty quickly if you're going to mesh well with LeBron James. And some of those guys can mesh well with anyone. And I kind of feel that way about Larry Nance. I mean, you play with Kobe Bryant, you play with LeBron James, and then you're now on a rebuilding team at home and you're cool. You're a dude that, like, you literally could play with anyone and you're going to be fine. Kevin's a different case. Like, Kevin luckily could handle LeBron, but even then there's still so much friction between the two of them fitting in, fitting out, Da Vinci Code references and all the other stuff. And we look up and like, there's no one who would say that at this point that the two of them didn't coexist and operate effectively together. I mean, look, Kevin's injuries aside and some of the bad luck that he had, but the two of them got along. Well, all the bit and role players are a different story. And so those guys, you look up and that's just a, it's an assembly of just pieces with no whole, no identity. So they try to figure out what that identity is outside of we've been to the championship a few times. Like Tristan's a very, very good case in that because he had no idea how to operate that first year after LeBron went to LA. And then you turn around and no one was calling Tristan Thompson like a vet leader until 2019, 2020. Like what he was able to do in like reimagining his role on that team is pretty amazing. And it's something that didn't get talked about enough among the storylines of the season, which there were a lot of things to talk about. So I get it. But Tristan Thompson was not that guy. Even when he played with LeBron, he was not that guy. He was like an 8-8 dude who was pretty happy with LeBron James and grabbing rebounds. But even near the end of that stretch, he wasn't playing. He had done enough to like work his way out of the rotation. And then you turn around and he's a almost all-star heading into the 2020 all-star break. It was pretty incredible what he was able to do. And so all these other dudes who were kind of just like there, all want to score, all want a contract. They all want to win, but they know they're not winning. And then you've got this 19-year-old who comes in, who's making faces and balling up his fist and saying, come on, guys, like, we need to work out. We need to practice. We need to go shoot. And you're like, who is this guy? We were just in four finals. Like, brush him off. We don't need to deal with this kid. Like, he's a joker. And I don't know that that's what they were saying because, like, I'm not in the locker room every game like you guys are. I'm only there, like, 2-3 times a year when I'm home to see my parents or I'm working on a specific story. But – the evolution of how Colin was perceived really seems to coincide with how his personal growth was and where the team started kind of finding their own voice. And that takes a year and a half to 2 years following when you have such a, because there was no Heat culture. There's no Spurs culture when it comes to the Cavs. So you can't just lose a guy and then like, oh, well, our culture will see us through. The Cavs culture for the better part of 17 years is LeBron James, whether he's on the Cavs or not. And so they've never established something new. And you need players like Colin. You need guys like KPJ. You need, honestly, like you need Garland to take a huge step forward in year two. These guys need to own it. And whether it's Tristan and Kevin who help guide them by saying, like, this is what we did when we won, but I understand that we're a different team. And we can't just like do the things we used to do because this team is different. The second they stop comparing themselves to LeBron, that's when they're going to be in a good place. But yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm sure that's what happened with Colin is these guys were just kind of like rolling their eyes at this dude, like working as hard as he did and saying he's going to do it and he's going to handle it, especially when he's as quiet as he is. It's like a different, not trying to compare the two guys, but like, Trae Young exudes this confidence and he's vocal and he's this way. Colin does feel you out. They both don't trust you off the bat. You need to earn their trust, but how they do it is a little bit different. And I think sometimes people mistake silence or relative shyness for weakness in the NBA. And I think you just have to develop that confidence on your own. And it does take time. But a big part of Colin, and again, this is something that came up with everyone I talked to with him, is it's not that he is shy. It's not that he's cold. He is calculating and he has a photographic memory and he's like a huge math guy. And like, I think those things are important in understanding him from like an analytical side of his brain. But once you earn his trust, you're in, he just keeps his circle tight. And so I think once that circle is his teammates and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and there's some consistency. Again, I can't say enough how important it's going to be to have a coach in that space who coaches him for an entire year straight. Like once that happens and maybe you get a second whole year, but like that will really, really help him. And I heard early on, or like we're talking September, October of last year, the impact that JB was having on those guys. And I think they did the right thing in keeping him versus anybody else and saying, this is your job, hold on to it. Now the Cavs need to not make an overreaction and like remove him after they start 8-15 or whatever. Like, he needs to be the coach for at least two more seasons, because otherwise you're giving this rebuild no chance and you're giving Colin Sexton no chance. And like, the last thing Cavs fans want to see is Colin not getting that second deal or being traded away as part of a knee-jerk reaction to try to compete to get the 8 or 7 seed, and then him being immensely successful immediately somewhere else, which is, I think, the nightmare scenario for Cavs fans. I think it's a nightmare scenario for me, and I'm not even a quote-unquote Cavs fan anymore. But after seeing this over and over and over again, that would be the thing that would put the nail in the coffin for me.
I think it would for Chris and I as well. And I don't think I'm more of a jaded Cavs fan at this point. But yeah, no, losing Colin would be devastating for me at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions with, like, it's crazy that he's already contract extension eligible a year from now, and like, he's never had a coach, as you point out, for a full year. So again, there you have it. There's part one of our conversation with Martin Rickman. We'll be back on Monday with him again, talking about a whole bunch of other Cavs things as noted at the top. A little bit of an odder break there for the end of the show, just because of how long it went and how it was unplanned for us to go that long with him. But again, really glad to have it. We'll have book club and a little talking about the new Cavs doc series will be up tomorrow in the feed. Then Martin will be back with us on Monday. So thanks again, everyone, for listening. Thanks for support. Stay safe out there. Make sure you're getting your votes in. We'll talk to you soon.